It's the 31st of May, 2013. I'm Dan O'Neill, and I am with Jim Loftus, and we are sitting on the banks of the Chena River, 40 miles down the road or so. Jim, give me a little test.
Yeah, this is Jim Loftus, sitting here with Dan, enjoying the beautiful riverside, and looking forward to a little conversation.
So, Jim, I guess I should say that you and I have been friends since we were 10 years old, and we went to high school together, and we've been pals since then. We are now, you're 63, I'm almost 63. Anyway, to start off with, tell me a little bit about where you were born and raised, and also a bit about your forebears.
Yeah, born and raised in San Francisco, and stayed there a long time until just after college. My mother and father were also born in San Francisco, but their parents all came from Ireland. And as a matter of fact, singly, and all, they met in San Francisco and got married and had their families there. So I had stayed there through college and sometime around just after college in 1972, had a chance to, after graduation, to drive up to Fairbanks with a friend of mine, who, Jim Ringstad, who had a pickup truck that he was bringing back up. And sounded like a wonderful adventure to me. So I saved all my money and sold my bicycle and put $160 in my pocket and drove away.
Okay, let me back you up some more. Tell me a little bit about your father and mother and even, you know, their background a little bit.
Well, my father was had sort of a rough childhood. His father died at when my father was 10, my mother raised him until she was she was a pretty young woman too. Can't remember what age she died, but she died when my father was 16, and he had no brothers and sisters. He then moved into some first cousins' houses outside of San Francisco, over, and they moved over to Oakland, and he lived with the O'Connells from the time he was 16 until he went into the Marines during World War II.
So, were both his parents Irish?
Both were Irish, yes. One was, the Loftus side came from County Mayo, Ballina, and his mother's side, Drohan's, came from Waterford. My mother's side, her father was from Clifton in Galway County, and her mother was from Moycullen in Galway County. And she was raised in the city. I don't remember when her father died. I was a pretty young kid when her father died. I didn't know him. And her mother died when I was a senior in high school. She's a wonderful lady. She was the only grandparent I ever knew.
What were her parents' names?
Nora and Joseph. Nora Garrity. Joseph King.
So all four of your grandparents were born in Ireland.
They all were.
Just like myself, Jim.
Aye.
Did you ever get Irish citizenship?
No, I didn't. I still got the paperwork in a file cabinet at my house, and never filled it out for some reason. Who knows? Put it off. Kept putting it off. But I could have gotten it.
Okay, so Mary King and Jim Loftus the second. Let's see, by the way, you're the third, so your father and your grandfather had the exact same name, James Joseph Loftus.
That's correct.
Anyway, Jim Loftus and Mary King got together, and tell me about that.
Yeah, they both grew up in the San Francisco area, had lots of common friends. Well, my grandmother lived over in the Mission District. My father had common friends or relatives. He was going to school at St. Joseph's in Alameda County. And as a matter of fact, he was on the high school championship basketball team in 1941 and 42. And somehow their common friends got together, common friends and relatives. The Irish community was pretty tight back in those days. They met and got married. Let's see, it was not before the war, it was after the war. Because I remember he came back from the war and met her in the Hibernia Bank, where she was a bank teller. And he rekindled his friendship and eventually more because he was working nearly across the street at the telephone company at the time.
Where is this?
This was out in Geary Street on San Francisco. And she was at the Hibernia Bank. And the other tellers always made sure that when he came in to make a deposit that Mary was the only teller available. And they got together and got married. I can't think what year they got married right now. But had my older sister Jeannie pretty quick. Then had me in May 17th, 1950. But right before I was born, my father was, unfortunately, after fighting 3 years in World War II, he was in the reserves in the Marines, and the Korean crisis kicked off, and he got called back for 18 months. And he actually never saw me until he got back. I think I was a year something old for sure. And he had a rough time in Korea. But he came back, and I remember asking him one time, oh, God, he must have been tired. I said, did you take some time off before you went back to work? He said, all I got was the weekend. And they said, show up Monday morning. And that's what I did. So he served World War II, 3 years, a little bit of time off, Korean War 2 years, and they gave him a weekend off and back to work. But
he was where during World War II?
World War II, he was in the Pacific Theater, and he was in the Marines, several different islands. Worked on an association with some of the airplanes that the Marines had. He was on the islands loading up the airplanes for flights before they would take off.
And before we leave your mother altogether, where did she live exactly, and what schools did she go to?
She lived on Lisbon Street in the Mission District.
The Outer Mission District?
Yes. And she went to, I think it was Corpus Christi Grammar School, which was right near there. And then she went to St. Paul's High School. And as I recall, she was in the same class as your mother. So our ties go back quite a ways. Yeah, she went there and graduated from there, and I don't know the year, and went to work pretty much as a bank teller pretty soon after that. There was not a lot of money in the family at all. It was... pretty blue-collar family.
Okay, so now maybe take us through your childhood schools you went to. And
After my father got out of Korea, they came back home. They were living in an apartment in the Marina district. And they were looking around for a home to build and found one in Mill Valley across the bay, across the Golden Gate, and bought a little 800 square foot house there, kind of a little cracker box house, just like all in a row. Very nice little area, pretty simple. And we lived there from the time I was maybe 3 or 4 until we moved back to the city when I was in the third grade. Turns out my mother had some allergies and they were really bothering her over in the countryside. But they bought a house in the Sunset District, between 17th and 18th on Rivera Street.
What number?
727 Rivera. And we settled in there and they kept that house for, almost from 1958 till, he's been out of there 7, 8 years now. 2004 maybe. Went to St. Cecilia's Grammar School right near there. Reardon High School. And then got out of Reardon High School and went right across the street to City College of San Francisco for 2 years. And then the last 2 years of undergrad, I went to University of Santa Clara. And
so, high school or even grammar school, any particular... Maybe start with grammar school. Anything stands out, or particular friends, or anything?
Not really. It was a pretty surprisingly, even though we were living in a big city, it was a small neighborhood, small town atmosphere in the neighborhood that we grew up with. So there was a lot of kids in the neighborhood. Played a lot of unorganized sports almost every day. Football in the street and basketball down at Lincoln High School outside and baseball at McCoppin Park and riding bikes and doing it. Was a pretty nice childhood. It was a great place to grow up.
Who were your buddies?
Just the guys on the block. It was Steve Panetti and Ira Bray and John Cotter and Terry Heron and all the San Ximeno brothers and the Costello brothers around the corner, and a lot of kids in the neighborhood. Branched out a little more when you get to high school, but mostly you stayed within your grammar school.
How about the grammar school teachers? Any inspiring ones in particular? Or the reverse?
Well, St. Cecilia's school was run by the Holy Name Sisters. And, of course, they were all in habit back in those days. In some way, they were kind of a blur. And I was a pretty quiet kid. I don't think I raised a ruckus ever. I remember one of the nuns thinking there must be something wrong with me because I was so quiet. But in the end, she decided I wasn't. I made it through. I can't say that any one teacher inspired me. I was a pretty average student. The thing I liked to do was read. I was quite a reader of novels. And I liked to play sports outside and with my friends. And that was about it. I was not a totally contemplative kid who was always trying to figure out what was beyond my horizon. My horizon was just what it was.
He just checked the level. I remember when I first knew you, you were a great reader. So, like, what did you, how early were you reading what?
I would have to say the early novels were just kind of kids' novels, nothing dramatic. I do recall starting in high school when they started giving us more of the classics to read that I was hooked on those, and I would go down to the Emporium, which was a store in Stonestown, which was very early type of shopping mall in high school, and go to the classics section of the bookstore and buy whatever books seemed like they were going to be good books, not knowing anything about them, really. And through that, I started reading the authors that, like Hemingway and the great American and European authors, and I found great relief in crawling into these books and discovering different worlds and really starting to look at that horizon and think more about what was out there besides what was had been defined for me.
Sir Walter Scott and Mark Twain.
Right? Yeah, all those kinds of books. Yeah, just Steinbeck, Hemingway, mostly those are the American authors. Henry James, Thomas Hardy, I was a big fan of Thomas Hardy. Loved his descriptions. Those kinds of books. Just novels, just pure classic masterpiece novels. As defined at the time.
Now, you were also a scout, Jim.
Yeah, I was in the Boy Scouts starting in, I think it was the 7th grade. Sounds about right. It was a good outlet for me. I was kind of a nerdy kid in school. Certainly not one of the class leaders or anything. And in scouting, I found a different world where I was more highly valued or something, or more appreciated or something. And I always enjoyed the atmosphere. Plus, I was with a great bunch of guys, and we had a lot of fun camping and going places and doing things that I wouldn't normally have done at all. Excuse me.
What guys do you remember?
Oh, the San Simino brothers. Terry Heron and all those guys who were in my neighborhood were in my Hawk Patrol, which is a patrol in the scouting thing. And we were kind of a bunch of renegades, to tell you the truth. We didn't quite fit into the overall mold. Maybe they were trying to get us to fit into, a little more likely to break some rules and have some fun. And it was a great getaway for all of us.
And where did you go camping?
You know, it's funny. it's all Northern California. there were places around Tamalpais, excuse me, Lake Lagunitas area, up near the Russian River. There was some camps up there. Those are the ones I remember. Kirby Beach, down below the Golden Gate Bridge. Fun places to go, not particularly far away. Places I never would have. excuse me. I never would have known about.
Take a break and cough. Yeah. I'll just say that you're coughing a fair bit because you had pneumonia recently.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. So.
But you know, you got going in scouting. Say a little more about what all you accomplished there.
Well, I guess there's two things to say, maybe. One is I became a leader in the troop, and the other, and I did get to be Eagle Scout. Some people think that's a pretty big deal. I don't. It kind of was pretty easy to do. We just went to some classes and summer camp, and you did a few other little things, and I find it relatively trivial.
Quite a lot you have to do.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's gotten worse. I never thought it was that very big of a deal. Pretty simple. And I stayed with it through freshman year of high school, I think. And started getting into some of the older scout things. But then I lost interest. Of course, in high school, you start moving on to a whole different social scene and have much more freedom. People start getting driver's licenses, and that whole scouting thing became much less important to me.
Okay, so one thing that became important in high school was track.
Yep. I had liked to run all my life. Even in first and second grade, I was always curious how fast I was. I was pretty fast for a little first grader. And I wasn't coached in any of the formal sports ever. We played pickup ball, everything. And as a consequence of that, I wasn't really that good at, technically, in things like basketball or baseball or football. I loved the games, but didn't have the skill level that a kid would have had if he'd been in a program. But track really intrigued me right from freshman year, and I thought, well, I'm gonna try this. You know, I was in the band. I played saxophone in the band, and I wanted to do something different besides that. And I went out for the track team and thought I was a sprinter, but over the period of time figured out that I was actually my skill level was a mid-distance runner, which was basically considered 400 meters to 800 meters. But the 400 was the one that I ended up focusing on. We call it 400 now. Back then the freshman and sophomore in high school ran 330 yards, and the varsity juniors and seniors in the varsity ran 440 yards, which are really about the same distance, not much difference.
And the
880 versus the 800 now. Again, not a huge difference in distance.
What is the difference?
It's about 10 feet. Yeah. I'm just guessing at that. I can't remember. We've been measuring off the distance for the mile versus the 1600 at the track meets up here. And that's closer to 28 feet.
And the metric equivalent is a little longer.
No, the metric equivalent is a little shorter. The metric equivalent for the 400 and 800 is shorter. The metric equivalent for the mile is, the mile is longer than the metric equivalent 1600. So it varies.
Well, take us through your track accomplishments.
Pretty minimal. I mostly ran track my first 3 years at Reardon, just because I loved it. I wasn't particularly fast. But my senior year, I started training a little bit more, and I think I was a very late maturer. my muscle strength. I was a real skinny kid. My senior year, I actually got pretty good. And had the fastest times in the league. And ran a pretty good time. I ran 50.1 for the 440 yards, which is equivalent to a 49.8 400 meters now, which was pretty good time. You know, it was not world class, but quite respectable.
Did in senior year fastest time in the league in 400?
Yes, 440 as they called it at the time.
At 50.1.
Yeah.
Did you run that in the league meet?
I did.
Good job.
Actually, I know I ran the race in the league meet. I didn't run the run that time in the league meet. I ran the whole season of my senior year with a cast on my arm from the tip of my thumb up past my bicep. So I ran that 50.3 with that cast on my arm at Bellarmine High School, as a matter of fact. Then right before the league meet, the doctor decided he could take my cast off. And I thought, well, gosh, I've run the whole season with this cast on. I wonder if I should do that. And I thought, well, yeah, it'll be lighter. And he cut it off. And it just felt really funny. It threw off my stride. I didn't run good at the league meet. And I had this funny arm and elbow movement that was unnatural. It was unnatural to not have a cast. Which is all just a funny story now. But
did you place?
I took second. First race, I lost the whole season.
And what about your 880 in these days?
I never ran, I ran the 880 once. Just because I wanted to see if I could run two races in one day. And it was hard. I ran like 201. Wasn't particularly fast or particularly slow. It was hard to run both races, and I really never trained for it. But I kind of realized that my 440 speed was not good enough to make it in college, and I probably was physiologically better at the 880. And when I went to San Francisco City College across the street, I started training for longer distances. I knew I couldn't just train with the sprinters anymore. And I tried cross country, which was very difficult. Those guys had to work out hard. And then I went out for the 880. And ran the 880 in junior college. But it was a very difficult transition to make, actually. It took me 2 years to figure out how to run it. And I never broke 2 minutes while I was in City College for those 2 years. But in the summer times, me and my buddy Jim Tracy would go to all-comer track meets. And I finally figured it out at the Marin High School track one Thursday evening in the summer after junior college. And I finally broke 2 minutes. I ran like a 157.8, which is a huge break.
What did you figure out?
It was just pacing myself and learning how to breathe and sprint and learning how to relax. I always had gone out too fast.
What did you change in your breathing?
A method of learning how to relax while I ran the first lap and concentrating on deeper and slower breaths.
Let's go on up through your track story up until today, and they will come back to where we were in high school. So, City College getting down in the 150s?
No, City College, I never broke two. After City College, I ran 157, I think was the fastest, and then I went to the University of Santa Clara, and they didn't have a track team, but I just ran on my own. I mean, I was like the only guy that ran and trained for track meets, and I would train. They had a winter all-comers track season in the Bay Area and a summer all-comers track season. And I would drive up to City College of San Mateo and just run in the track meets. And I was going to Santa Clara at the time. I'd ride my bicycle over to San Jose City College and jump the fences there and run on the track and train there. Trained by myself. I just trained by myself all the time. I never trained with anybody for years and years. And I used the same track workouts that my junior college coach gave us, a really great track coach named Lou Vasquez. He was a terrific coach. I just did the workouts he gave me every single time, which was 8 times 400 meters with a 200 meter jog. And you just kept your times and you tried to do better at every workout. And it was a foolproof method for me. It gave me very specific rules, and I worked a lot on my form and my breathing with no distractions from anybody else. Going to the track to do intervals was like going to church, or almost. It was, you had the place to yourself, and it became a very yoga-like experience, very pure, performance-oriented, body-centered moment of perfection in life. It was quite the release in many ways. And the workouts were hard.
I guess 8 quarters in time with only a 200 jog in between.
Yeah.
You're reminding me now of what I hated about
Very much becomes a mental thing, and you know how tired you're going to be, and when you finish one, as exhausted as you are, you know that by the time you jog over to the next starting line, you're going to be recovered. You have to believe that, and you are. It's surprising how you can build up your heart to do that. Yeah, and so I ran those all-comers track meets, and I think it was in my senior year I started winning the all-comers track meets. And I got down to a 154.6 at a San Mateo track meet one time at the championships. Took first place. Beat a bunch of guys that used to beat me in junior college. And
had it coached, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was just what we did.
And what's next in your running career?
Well, after that, after college, I came up to Fairbanks here. Didn't do really any running at all. I was working most of the time and took quite a few years off. I think it was after the pipeline ended for me, which was in 1976. I went back down to San Francisco and started hanging out with my running buddies again, rented a place out at the beach, and started running. They were doing a lot of distance running, and they were doing, in the springtime, they started running. We went over to the San Francisco State College track and did intervals with the track team there. There was three other guys and I that would do that. And I got in pretty good shape, although I never raced once, but I was in terrific shape. But I left there and came, drifted back up to Fairbanks, built a house that summer in 77. Went to Europe. Excuse me. met my relatives in Ireland. And then went and started grad school at University of Washington, January of 78. And didn't really start running until then again. I got back on a schedule when I was in grad school. Started training again, you know, and I was 28 years old then. And, you know, I kept that same exact same training regimen from Lou Vasquez. Had the track to myself at UW in the mornings. It was, I could go down there at 9 or 10 in the morning and run a good workout, and then go to classes.
Yeah. Okay, we're back.
I think I just got back to UW and started training again.
Yeah.
And I had pretty good luck, and I won the intramural track championships 2 years in a row there in the 800, and I started going to the all-comer track meets in Seattle, and there's a really good, strong running group there with a club called Club Northwest. And I happened to live in a house, I was married by then. Well, no, not at grad school, I wasn't, but soon thereafter. I met a bunch of these guys and really liked them a lot. Started going to the all-comers track meets, and it was what you did on a Tuesday night, or Thursday night, and then we'd all go out and drink beer and have a good time afterwards. Great bunch of guys. I was there. I was at the UW for a year and a half, got my master's degree, came back up to Fairbanks for about a little more than that. Got married to my lovely wife, Eileen, and there were no jobs in Fairbanks. I worked for a little while doing subdivision design, and named all those roads out on the Gold Stream, Bell Stream Road. There's a section right out there with a bunch of Irish names. Waterford, Ballinagh, Galway, Clifton, all those roads out there.
Spittle.
I named all those roads just because I was designing the subdivision. And I had just been to Ireland to meet my relatives, so I named them after all my relatives. And other towns they were from. And anyway, that really wasn't what I went to graduate school for. I was a structural engineer.
Oh, wait a second. I'm going to back you up again. Before we leave that subdivision, you named that one road Spittle after my grandmother's hometown. Remember that?
I do remember that.
Let me just switch your mic. You think to that side there. Okay. And I want to, do a whole thing on your career, but I just thought we'd just go right straight through the running.
The running part, yeah. So I was up here a short time, and then I went, had to get a job, went back down to Seattle. Didn't have any money. Eileen moved in with her sister. I put my wedding suit on and pounded the pavement down there and got a job. Second place I went. And 6 weeks later, I had enough money to send for Eileen and rent out a little house. And the house was fairly close to the University of Washington. And all the running Club Northwest guys were down there. And just fell into the lifestyle of working and running and going to the all-comers meets. And, of course, we had a lot of friends there from college, too. And that's when I started actually getting better and better at track. And I kept improving, and we would run the whole season, typically all-comer season, at Bellevue Junior College. And at the end of the season, there was a championship track meet up in British Columbia at Swan Guard Stadium in Canada. And me and a couple other guys would go up there, and that was our chance to run against some really good competition from all around Canada. And we did pretty good. My last year that I went up there, I ran the fastest time of my life. I was 32 years old, and I ran a 153.4, 800 meters, which is, like I say, quite a bit faster than anything else I had run. I think I took fifth place. I mean, this was a high-class meet. The guys that won were pretty good runners. And I was pretty darn proud of that. Really proud of that. And I still remember, I have it written down somewhere, I had done that same Lou Vasquez track workout of 8 400s with the 200 jog the week before, faster than I had ever run them before. I was running probably an average of 61 seconds for each 400 and a jog in between. And the last one was in like 57. I knew when we drove up to the Swan Guard, I was going to run the best time of my life. I knew it. And I predicted it, and it actually came out that way.
Now, to the uninitiated, you took a second off since 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
More than 10 years earlier. So
yeah.
Making a second's progress in 10 years doesn't sound like a huge thing, but in running that distance, it's a big deal.
It is. Yeah, it is. Which is not to say that if I had stayed at it really steady and worked out hard, much harder all my life, I might have got even better than that, you know. My career was relatively sporadic. Looking back on it and hearing how much other people trained, I didn't train that much, you know. I fitted into my lifestyle and did pretty good at that level. And it was good enough. It made me happy, you know.
Okay, now, then you, when you got up here, were you kind of the motive force behind getting the all-comer track meets going at West Valley High School?
Well, yeah, they had a series going there when I got here. I had remembered running in an all-comers track meet during the pipeline back in 1974. It was out at the Fort Wainwright track. And I don't know if it ran continuously from then until we moved back up here in 1984. But they did have an all-comers track season going. And I started running in that. You know, I wasn't really quite as serious then. And then I ended up taking over coordination of it and running it. Dan Callahan was running it when I started. And I don't know if he took it over from somebody or not. But I ran that all-comers track season from, I don't know, 86 until this year. I'm not doing it this year. And every Wednesday night, we'd have a track meet. And the participation was pretty good. First
Wednesday in the summer.
Yeah. Wednesday in June in the summer. There's only four of them. And a lot of fun. They're really nice people. It was very much a social, almost a family scene. Not hugely competitive, but a nice outlet and a lot of fun. Yeah. And then when they started the senior games here 10 years ago, I became the commissioner in charge of the senior games track meet. I did that for 10 years. And I'm not doing that this year either. But
maybe just say in a word, how come you're not doing those two things?
Well, I have cancer, and I'm just not able to keep up doing that. And I also gave up my duties as organizers of the officials for the high school.